David, thank you, and thank you very much to the Foundation for Science and Technology for inviting me. I am going to speak as an employee of Public Health England, but as it's after 6 o'clock, you may allow me to indulge in some personal reflections as well. And it's great following Kathy and Lee, because I have now had the ability to wipe off a third of my presentation, which was looking at some of the data. What I'd like to do, though, is make a plug for PHE and some of the stuff that we've been doing over the pandemic. If you want to get access to good, up-to-date surveillance of COVID-19 and its impact on mental health, and particularly there's a chapter every time we publish it on children and young people, then please do look at our COVID-19 surveillance report on the impact of the pandemic on mental health. We've been publishing roughly monthly since September. These are publicly available statistics, which we've amalgamated from a range of sources in as close to real time as we can. And also the next one will be out on the 8th of April, around about then. The second thing I'd like to direct you to is, or offer to you, is our psychological first aid training course for anybody working with children and young people. It's available on the Future Learn site. It's free. And at the moment we've had we launched it on February the 21st, and we've had nearly 60,000 people register for that course from across the world. So please do register for that evidence-based course. Very helpful and practical and quite simple in enabling people to respond to children and young people in the face of an emergency or a pandemic. What I'd like to do, though, is just offer a little bit more of a wider perspective. Because I come from public health, we are interested in the whole population across the life course. We are interested in the risk and protective factors that influence people's lives and the wider social determinants, particularly some of the inequalities and structural defaults that we find within our society: racism, sexism, misogyny. So we have to look at the whole thing in a big context. That makes it extremely complex, but I don't think we can look at the topic of mental health of children and young people unless we take into account that wider or structural and cultural context. So let me just say a few things about before the pandemic. You've heard previous speakers talk about the shortages and gaps in children and young people's mental health services. There was also a dominant focus on service responses, and that dominant focus on service responses, whether they are through the NHS or through social care — wouldn't it be great if social care was funded more effectively — and also settings within schools, is the dominant focus on responding to the mental health of children and young people. The Children and Young People's Mental Health Green Paper, which is a joint green paper from our health and education departments, had a real focus on schools, and a lot of what I might say in terms of what comes after would be, again, not to put so much emphasis on some of the services and settings, because if we're looking at the mental health of children and young people, we need to be accentuating some of the things that keep us and our children and young people mentally healthy. Mental health and mental illness, there is a lack of focus on promotion and prevention and the social determinants and looking at the risk and protect factors before the pandemic. Measurement was overly clinically based, focusing on deficits and symptomology. And research tended to be funded where it was funded for mental health in terms of clinical responses and illness treatment. And there was a pretty woeful attempt to engage children and young people, both in terms of policy development, but most importantly, in delivery. You've heard enough from the other speakers about what's been happening during the pandemic and the effects that's been having on it. But our recent chapter on children and young people's mental health states right at the beginning that available evidence suggests that children and young people have coped well. Life satisfaction appears to have only been slightly reduced, and children and young people's happiness appears to have been relatively stable. There is evidence suggesting that some children and young people, especially those with certain characteristics and social circumstances, appear to have experienced greater negative impacts. So we mustn't overestimate, but we mustn't underestimate, and we have to be proportionate in that. In relation to what comes afterwards, what I would be arguing for is a more targeted and proportionate response, where we're able to address some of the inequalities, race, and some of the other structural issues. Where we look at mental health alongside our response to distress and illness, and we have a much wider cultural and social response to mental health, which is more than healthcare. And there are other countries which are way ahead of what we're doing in terms of turning our attention to some of the key things that matter for a society, whether it's New Zealand's attempt at looking at well-being indicators and well-being as a source of investment for how we might look after future generations, and judging our policy responses against an impact assessment on well-being. I'm thinking here also of the All Wales work in relation to the well-being of future generations. I think there are much more imaginative ways we can think about the mental health of children and young people in a wider policy context. We need much greater partnerships across, obviously, health and education, but local government, the engagement of communities, families, and parents, and the active engagement of children and young people. And when we talk about schools, it was really kind of a bit disappointing for me to hear our new children's commissioner talking about the need to have a counselor in every school. I'm not so sure that that is the right kind of response to the social, emotional, and psychological development of our children. And I'm lucky enough to do some pro bono work for The Place to Be, and they have developed a very sophisticated whole school approach where the culture and the ethos of the whole school attenuates the social, emotional, and psychological development of the child, the engagement of the parents, and the well-being of staff. I'd also like to see greater emphasis on digital and artificial intelligence. We need much greater resilience around the quality assurance and safeguarding, and looking at the evidence and the evaluation of digital and AI opportunities. But as we are talking here from science and technology, that offers us a wonderful opportunity for the future, as long as we're engaging children, young people, and families in that. Measurement has to be wider, not just distress and deficit. We've got some amazing researchers in that field in this country. Pravita Patale from UCL. There's an amazing mental health quotient questionnaire that's been supplied by Sapien Labs, which has had over 48,000 people across the world do that. It's adult based, but I'd really encourage you to look at that. That's the kind of measures of mental health, mental distress, living with mental illness and recovering that I think we need. And there's another good organization to look out for, which is Impact Ed, which looks at measuring the impact of education. Research needs to be much more collaborative, more integrated, more multidisciplinary, much more intervention in early intervention and investment in promotion and prevention with children and young people at the heart. It's very encouraging to see the Wellcome Trust put multi-million pound development into programs addressing the active ingredients of children and young people's depression and anxiety. And lastly, I think we should look for future innovation to come from our younger generations. People of my generation are quite frankly past it in understanding the contextual and personal, professional, and social characteristics that young people face nowadays. I work, lucky enough to do some work for the Zinc Mental Health Academy, where I help curate some of the program. And we've got 30 pioneers who've been engaged in a 9-month long journey looking at what they can contribute to mental health, and the activism, the advocacy, the encouragement, and the positivity of young people in that group is quite astonishing. And they're moving to a venture build of 4, where 70 people from around the world will be spending a year concentrating on how they can use technology and digital technology in particular to improve the mental health and well-being of children and young people. So for me, it's about looking, yes, at the people who have been most vulnerable, but looking at how well and the ingredients by which people cope, they adapt, and the resilience that we build through adversity. So I would be accentuating the possibilities, not necessarily the positivities, and pushing the boundaries of science to go wider and technology for good to improve the mental health and well-being of children and young people in the future. Thank you.